I'm David, and welcome to the Datasaurus Rex podcast, where we interview data visualization experts and get to know them and their viz's that little bit better. By the end, you should learn new skills and get inspired to enhance your own data viz game. Today's guest is Joshua Smith, who's made some amazing data visualizations. Some of the ones which caught my eye were comic book related, but he's made many others. And today he's going to guide us through some of these and just kind of his process and everything. So welcome, Josh. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. So yeah, this is all amazing stuff. There's probably, I'd love to know about each one, but I feel we should, dive in. But before we do, could you just briefly introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers?
Yeah, definitely. So as was mentioned, my name is Josh. I run under the Twitter handle of Data Jackalope, and kind of the brand of Jackalope Data and Design. The idea coming that the jackalope is this weird creature that's a blend of a jackrabbit and an antelope. And that really describes my skill set and my approach. So I've got a background in data science and a background in user experience and design. And I try to blend those all the way through my visualizations. My current role is as the creative director in analytics, which you can see is kind of a jackalope title in and of itself, at Front Health. And we help health systems transition from a fee-for-service model where they're paid on the quantity of care that they deliver to value-based care where they're paid based off of the value that they're delivering and how they make people healthier.
Oh, wow, interesting.
So it's a really fun place to work. I really believe in the cause, and then I get to run a data viz consulting practice in there. So trainings, workshops, helping people think through the bigger picture and design strategy all the way through design implementation. So, you know, how do you make sure that you're building dashboards that people want to use and actually help them make decisions, as opposed to building things that look good to you as the analyst, but then when the users get it, it's just a complete miss. So I really enjoy doing that and then developing products internally that we can take to our customers as well.
Oh, no, it's a good feeling. Yeah. And I think that's important. Building for the user, not for yourself, is a key thing. Because, if you make a dashboard, no one uses it. You know, what's the point, right?
What's the point?
So, no, that's really exciting. Okay, cool. So, let's dive into one of your viz's, which caught my eye, which is the Captain Marvel one. And it's really awesome to see you, you know, not only doing this in your day job, but also kind of, I guess, flexing your creative muscles with these Tableau public viz's. So it's really exciting to see that stuff. For those of you on the podcast, I'm actually looking at the viz now. So if you actually want to go explore it, the links will be in the show notes below. I'm just going to scroll through, but would you, I guess the first question we're going to have is, what would be the inspiration or what is the inspiration for this viz? And I'll explore whilst you're talking.
Yeah, I mean, hands down, and obviously for the viz, the inspiration was women. I had been making a number of comic book visualizations and wanting to explore different superheroes. And you know, you can explore the big names that you're seeing in the Avengers films, but there's also some names of people that people aren't familiar with. And then there's some superheroes, and the superheroes that I really love that kind of capture and embody important messages and spirits in our society. And Captain Marvel is a great example, especially the later run of Captain Marvel by Kelly DeConnick. She does such a good job of turning this into a women empowerment superhero. It kind of came together in the sense of I want to expose how a superhero can represent important cultural values for us and can empower people, but also shed light on different problems in society and how far we've come, but how far we need to go to get to things like equality and diversity. So knowing that women were so inspirational and that Captain Marvel was such a good example of a superhero that I could shed light on using data, the first step was to read some Captain Marvel. So I got my hands on some of Kelly's later comics. And I mean, I was blown away. I knew she was good. And I knew Captain Marvel was a really interesting superhero. Yeah. But reading her comics just took it to a whole new level for me. And honestly, she's my favorite writer now, hands down.
Oh, wow.
But it also opened up a lot more there. Also add in the fact that the movie was coming out, and I felt like Captain Marvel's not exactly a well-known hero, especially which Captain Marvel. There's been 7. So, you know, writing a little bit about that so that people can go into the movie a little bit more informed and maybe a little bit more excited.
No, that's awesome. And I'm going to have to check out that writer. I have to admit, I'm more of a DC person, but this kind of character, after seeing the movie and how you've just talked about this, I definitely want to go check out some of that work.
And, if I could convert you to Marvel, that'd be a huge success for that biz.
Well, I'll be a daywalker. I'll walk both sides, but we'll walk both sides of a line. Yeah. So, this is amazing. And what I also like is your viz, it takes you from, commercial or like the flying jobs industry to, I guess, breakdowns by state in America. It's really interesting to see how, what is that? Alaska has 10% female pilots, which is actually one of the highest, which is really cool. But also, you go into space with astronauts and then black holes. And then you get back to the superhero roots and you do those awesome, speed, strength, durability, fighting skills, IQ. Those, are they called radar charts? That's what they're called, right? Yeah. So I really love that. Like, because again, I didn't know there were 7 Captain Marvels, but also I didn't know how they all compare or if they would be different. But this viz helps me understand that too. So it's quite a mix, but I love the journey it takes you on. So it's not just about fictional people. It's you've kind of crafted a narrative in here, which is based in the real world too. So really good, really good stuff.
Yeah, and that's true of a lot of comic book heroes, right? Is they're capturing things that are happening in the real world. So for me, it wasn't too hard to just capture the data behind what the comic book characters are trying to capture already.
That's a good point. And yeah, I guess comics which draw upon aspects of real life, it's still fantastical beings, but I guess if it's grounded in some kind of narrative close to people, that's awesome. I guess the same goes for data viz stories. It's, if it's relatable, it's going to cut through more with your audience. So cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Speaking of data, the next question is, how did you go about collecting the data? Because it seems quite an eclectic mix.
Yeah. So reading the comic, made some of the stuff really kind of just pop to the surface. In the comic run, there's Helen Cobb that's supposed to be Captain Marvel's kind of hero in the series. There's a lot of really interesting talk about women in aviation, women in space. So I knew I needed to start there. Right. But when I'm trying to find the data, one of the first things I start with is just what I call rabbit hole research. Give myself the freedom to waste time. Let me click on links. Normally having 40 tabs open in a browser raises my blood pressure. This is a time when I'm a little bit more forgiving. And I see what's interesting. I see what catches my eye. And then I'll start trying to pull in different data sets. I'll do some analysis. See, is there anything interesting here? Is there anything that's going to shed light on Captain Marvel and women in aviation, or do I need to scrap it? Eventually curating down to a few data sets that I feel like were really part of this story.
Okay, that makes sense. And I guess there's a bit of discipline involved there, because even looking at your current list of sources at the bottom of the page, there's quite a lot there. So I can imagine, you had many more, but it must be a tough job to figure out what to pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes when you're pulling this stuff together, the story just kind of starts to write itself, right? As you're open-minded and your analysis and you kind of see those key insights, it's just the data tells you what the story is sometimes. The one thing that was tricky was getting my hands on, I knew I wanted to talk about, as we transitioned from women in space, I wanted to talk about black holes and this theoretical white holes. That's not necessarily hard data to get your hands on. It's incredibly difficult data to interpret. I couldn't find data dictionaries. There were, you know, most of the things were in the log scale. They have to be because these things are so big. And so, you know, you need to capture certain kinds of differences that normally we don't think about. So it was a really interesting challenge to find what gave me what I needed. And then also to find the interpretation of that and really try to make some sense out of it.
Wow. That's amazing. And that's kind of cool too, because not only do you make a good viz, but I often find when I do this stuff too, you learn a lot, which you wouldn't even think about. It's not like you wake up and go, I'm going to look at black hole data for no reason. But these kind of creative visualizations act as like, I guess, a good catalyst to go out and go find stuff and push yourself to try new things. And then you can learn new stuff, right? Which you've done, which sounds great.
Yeah, I would say I'm informed enough to ask an astronomer questions, not informed enough to have a good conversation or to, to have a perspective, but to at least ask them the right questions.
That's awesome. That's critical too.
Yeah. The last piece of data is just one that I found and have used consistently for all of my Marvel themed vizzes, which is marvel.com. They have the ratings across those criteria we talked about before for the ratings charts.
Yes.
I want to make sure to mention that, because I've gotten a little bit of questioning on my ratings of superheroes. And I want to say that they're not my ratings. These are Marvel. You can decide whether or not their website counts as canon.
Right.
There's some really weird trends in there about who you think could actually outfight and outsmart and outmaneuver who. But at least I'm pulling from something that's relatively canon.
Yeah, it's like, if it's wrong, it's not your fault. It's not your because I was going to ask you about this, because I did look at your Guardians of the Galaxy Star-Lord viz, and so what stood out to me was that Mantis has like amazing fighting skills and all this stuff, and I was like, wait, hang on, really? I hadn't seen any of that demonstrated, but maybe I haven't read enough of the comics. But it did seem interesting. Yeah.
I mean, I've got someone to blame, right? This multi-billion-dollar franchise called Marvel. I can blame them if people disagree, but those ratings really are more from the comics, and there are sides that we don't see when they translate into films. But it still can be hard to rationalize. You know, is her fighting skills so amazing because she just puts them to sleep and then she can, you know, slap them or whatever? Maybe that's the case. I don't know. I try to rationalize it, but sometimes it just seems like I would disagree with Marvel, but they're the experts.
Yeah. I think they'll be all right. Even if we disagree, they're big. They can take it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great. Okay. No, that's cool. I was curious where you're getting that from. So it's good to know. I might have to play around or see if there's a DC version, maybe.
Yeah. I bet there's gotta be something out there.
Oh yeah. I'd be surprised if not. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Thanks for that. Okay. So next question is, I guess you already touched upon it, or more about how you started to think about the how you approached it. But yeah, how did you come at this? Like, what was your process in creating this data viz?
I'm a really big believer in spending a little bit of time beforehand, or even a lot of time on the design strategy. So thinking about, what do I want people to feel? What do I want them to learn? And what do I want them to do? You know, design strategy has a little bit of a different meaning in graphic design and product design, but thinking about just an individual dashboard product and data visualization, that's kind of like the key questions I want to answer is, what do I want them to feel? What do I want them to learn? What do I want them to do? And so, you know, thinking about these topics, I wanted people to feel awe and inspiration at how awesome and powerful Captain Marvel is, but also at the women that inspired her. And also, you know, maybe just a hint of frustration at the BS that women have had to deal with to get to where they are what they still deal with.
Oh yeah. It's incredible. Like what they put up with, what they're going through. Yeah.
But then that frustration can even turn more into awe and inspiration as you see these women heroes over time overcoming those obstacles. And so I felt like those emotions could really feed each other and kind of create a loop of excitement and inspiration there.
Totally. I've learned a lot from this viz already, like how about Jerry Cobb and how she kind of paved the way for future, like, I guess, flyers and astronauts. It's amazing. And I didn't know half these names, these Russians and Americans who have been into space. It's really cool. I'm learning a lot from this stuff.
Yeah. I also, I mean, obviously I wanted people to feel like they were reading a comic viz. That was, that's an important piece there that really, it's a constraint in some ways. I believe that constraint breeds creativity. That comes from like my background in poetry. So having this constraint that I need it to look and feel and read like a comic book visualization was absolutely a critical component of the design strategy.
No, and I love that. It definitely comes through. It's definitely looking like very much like a comic. And that was going to lead me onto just a slight side question. Like, have you written comics before, or do you just feel you've read enough that you've kind of got a grip on the layout? I'm just kind of curious as how you've approached the flow and where you put all the text boxes and stuff like that.
Never really written or drawn comics. I mean, I'm sure that I drew little things when I was in middle school for fun, but you know, nothing serious or professional. I think a lot of reading and then a creative background, I think creative writing background helped me kind of pick up on some of the small nuances in the copy that they have in the text, how they narrate things, voice, tone, and style. By no means do I think I could submit this as an application to become a comic writer for Marvel, but you know, I think reading through a lot of those has given me a little bit of insight so I can, you know, maybe get 5 to 10 to 15% of the way there.
No, I love it. And I kind of asked because I actually, a while back, I kind of wrote and produced my own comic, and that actually gave me great insights into what the flow, like how do you tell a story? And again, I love that term you use, constraints, because again, you don't have the full luxury of you know, like moving pictures or like making stuff up as you go along. You've got to rethink about it. You've got maybe 6 frames maximum per page, and you've got a couple of words. Like, how do you do that? And yeah, and just for your reference to those on the audio podcast, I'm just throwing up a few pages because I realized I couldn't draw. So I found some very talented artists and gotten to realize that. But again, it was such a good experience. So that's, yeah, why I was asking like how you approached your comic book outputs.
Yeah, the copywriting of that text was just so, that's always the biggest struggle and one of the first places I start, because it's just an exercise of a lot of reduction. How do you keep the same voice and tone with a quarter of the words that you would normally say it with? And then also, you know, there's also how do you structure these, like you were saying, structure these to compel a reader to want to go from one pane to the next and just kind of move along their story and really accelerate them through it, as opposed to this body of text that they're like, I'm done, I'm just going to click out.
Yeah, because when there's too much, or it's, I think, yeah, often if you write too much, it's kind of a bit lazy because you haven't thought about it, you haven't kind of critically thought like, what do I put on, what isn't necessary. And then if you kind of respect the user, that I guess there's a higher chance they're going to kind of carry on and engage with your viz or your dashboard. So that's really awesome to hear. And I loved your the 3 points you had. Sorry, I forgot what you said. Was it feel? What do you want them to feel, learn, and do? That's amazing. Yeah, I love that. I'm going to take that to heart when I make my visits moving forward.
Yeah, and thinking about the learning aspect, right? We talked about the feel, but that idea I talked about where superheroes are these empowering and inspiring metaphorical characters about like real life problems and situations we're going through. I want people to learn that. That's what excites me about comics. These are really cool fantastical heroes, but at the end of the day, they mean something to me because of that. And that's what I want people to take away, even more than the inspiration of women in aviation. Let's look at the role that these characters are playing to inspire people. And let's try to get an understanding of why Marvel's movies, the later movies, are becoming so much more powerful and so important, with like Black Panther and Captain Marvel, these becoming successes for reasons beyond just the fact that they're a really good film. They're also really important.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I didn't really think about it like that, but it's true. These are powerful, I guess, stories in their own right, and they can inspire people if done right. And it's great to see, companies doing that now, which is awesome.
Yeah, I've seen women walking down the street wearing shirts that say "Higher, Faster, Farther, More." You know, like this is kind of becoming an anthem, a motto that I'm seeing to inspire a lot of empowerment and recognize feminine power, which is a really cool effect for a movie and a comic.
Yeah, totally. When typically the stereotype is it's just about some big white dude who has superpowers, right? Like it's, yeah, it's great to see that. So yeah, it's awesome. But it's there for everyone. Superheroes are, yeah, for everyone, and they're catching on to that. That's great.
Yeah, cool. I love Steve Rogers. I love Tony Stark, but like I don't need another strong or smart man in the picture. I want someone, yeah, that's going to bring a little bit of diversity. That's going to make a more interesting and arguably, yeah, valuable story. And not that those original heroes aren't important,
no,
but I want something, yeah, new, something refreshing.
Yeah, and that's, no, it's great to see. And I love that you've, yeah, championed that in this Fizz. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, so just, oh, no, carry on. Sorry.
The last question there is, what do I want people to do? And I would call this a success if somebody bought a ticket to go see Captain Marvel, or even if they wait till it comes out to streaming video or DVD or Blu-ray, and they watched it that way, right? I want people to engage more with the character and the character's brand. That's kind of like the key point for me and the key goal for users.
Awesome. Okay. I'll, you know, I can definitely recommend that too. It's a great film. Definitely go watch, guys.
Yeah.
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 Perfect. It's a good objective. awesome. Okay. Okay. Next question. Just in the interest of time, I don't want to take up too much of your time. So, what was the best insight you got from this Fizz? I think you already touched upon a few, but what was like the key insight you had, like, which made you go, oh, wow, or I have to tell people about this?
Yeah, in retrospect, this isn't really a mind-blowing insight, but this comes from the fact that, you know, I'm a man with man's experiences. So sometimes these insights that women would always say, like, well, yeah, duh, aren't as immediately apparent to me. But seeing that the issue of women in aviation is compounded by age was really interesting, yeah, to me, that men get this kind of second wind. You can imagine, you can imagine the stereotypical midlife crisis that men go through,
yeah,
or the idea that, like, hey, I'm coming close to retirement. I want a new hobby. Let me go learn to fly a plane. Yeah. And you don't see that bounce back for women. You just see a steady decline over time.
Yeah. I'm looking at that now, and it's, yeah, it's like there's a bump in the early 20s, late 20s, and then it just fades off. Whereas, yeah, the men, mm-hmm, spike back up at like 50. Yeah, literally, yeah, a midlife crisis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Interesting.
I was also, you know, I was also really surprised with how long it took the U.S. to get a woman to space, especially when you were thinking about this kind of competition that was happening, the race to space between Russia and the U.S. And I would have thought that the U.S. would have looked at Russia and said, we need to be doing that. But yet there's, yeah, this big gap where, you know, Russia gets a woman into space, and then nobody gets a woman into space, including Russia, for quite some time. And then the U.S. starts to catch up. That was an interesting gap to me.
That's so strange. Yeah, that's the best. Again, data is bringing that to life, and now everyone can see that, which is cool.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, no, it's cool. There's some good insights. I mean, there are far more, but that's a really good one to kind of draw out.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question is... yeah, okay. What skills did you learn from doing this project? Any in particular which stand out?
I mentioned before, it's a skill that continues to be refined, is the copywriting. Everything is so tricky. There's also, you know, as I dive into topics that as you know, a white male, I may not have experience in, I want to get other thoughts and perspectives. So all of these, there's exercises in taking those to people that are going to have the experiences. So I showed my text to a lot of women that I know, got their feedback, iterated through a lot. So there was also an exercise of writing about a topic that I don't necessarily have quote unquote skin in the game, or rather I don't have the experiences to necessarily be the right narrator for that. Getting feedback from the people that are, and integrating and incorporating that is a skill that I'm refining, employing, and that's helping, that's really helping advance my copywriting skills.
No, that's amazing. No, that's great. Yeah. I guess having empathy with your, I guess, either the people you're representing or your target audience is huge. Mm-hmm. So I guess, last thing you want to do is just assume, you know what people say when you assume, but also, you don't want to, I guess, end up mansplaining this stuff too, which is not, you know, it's going to kind of undo, like, do the opposite of what you're trying to do here. So that's a really good point. I love that you've approached it that way too. You've got feedback, guidance from, I guess, the people you're representing or trying to help. Yeah.
Yeah, it was especially helpful with the wording around, think about like the flight attendants. One of the things I wanted to do was to say, you know, look, flight attendants, that is that more stereotypical job that you see women doing more of. But I also didn't want to demean flight attendants that were women. I've known some of them, and they really love their job. I shouldn't say all of them do, but a lot of them really love their job. They find it really exciting. And the last thing I wanted to do was make a viz, and they look at it and they're like, wow, I guess Josh thinks that I just, you know, really am chasing gender norms and can't be creative myself. I wanted to make sure I worded that in a way to say, this isn't to demean you if you hold that job. This is just to say that, like, we're all focused in that category. Women are all focused in that category. And there's other areas that no doubt women are interested in, but they're not getting into those roles.
No, totally. That could be a tricky one, but I think, yeah, you've handled it really well. Okay, great. So that's awesome. Let's move on to the next question, which is, well, you've done this. What projects are next for you? And as you talk, I'm going to go over your Tableau public profile page just to kind of give people also a view of what you've done in the past whilst you talk about your future.
Yeah. So that's a really good question. I kind of stretched a lot of different ways right now. My personal visualization output has slowed down, but also transferred a little bit. So the company where I work, you know, we're trying to build up a little bit of a brand and reputation. So I'm building up this front health portfolio of visualizations, and those are really requiring some of that, you know, the other end of those jackalope skill sets I mentioned, some data science, biostatistics, econometrics. So that's taking up a lot of time at work, and then a little bit of time afterwards as well. But there's a few thoughts I have for some personal projects that I want to pick up. And, you know, kind of top of mind is the sort of maybe a Thanos snap simulator. I've really been bothered by his sampling method. You know, if his goal is to, you know, not wipe out an entire species, but to just half the universe, you know, I mean, does he have stratification in his random sampling algorithm? Because otherwise you can imagine a lot of endangered species are now completely wiped out. That's going to hurt the ecosystem, and it's going to have long lasting repercussions that could, you know, foreseeably wipe out entire ecosystems.
I like that. That's, I guess you could, and whilst doing that, you'd educate people on those kind of more statistical, or I guess common sense things. Yeah.
I overthink things, clearly, but I think there's a way to demonstrate some more complicated statistical concepts with that as well. So you can imagine it being part statistical education and part overthinking / really diving into some of the nuances of how this stuff would really work if it were to be a real life scenario.
Yeah, no, totally. And it is funny you mentioned overthinking, because I got a bit of a pedant myself, and I was like, if he's wiping out life, does that also count as the bacteria and like in the soil and then, you know, in all the ecosystems, and that will damage things too? Like it's really interesting. But I guess it's, at the end of the day, it's a film, but it would be really interesting to kind of learn what are the ramifications if you just do a blind 50-50 split.
If you think about it, if he were to just snap his fingers and 50% of the bacteria would die, that would eliminate the entire human population, because that's 50% of the bacteria we need in our bodies to digest food. So, you know, I don't know that Thanos, I wouldn't say this to his face, he's very strong and has some very powerful tools, but I don't know that he really thought through the full ramifications of what he was trying to do. So a viz to expose that could be interesting.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And actually, I guess it's a good point to bring it up, because this is one of the other ways I found Josh was through his, he's actually visualized the, I guess, timeline of where all the Infinity Stones were throughout all the Marvel films. Because me and my friends were like trying to figure out where each of the stones were, you know, as things were going, and we just couldn't figure it out. But then I kind of came across this, and it's amazing. It's just, you know, it's simple, it's clear, but if you hover your mouse, you get a bit of extra information, and it just does the job it needs to, which is, I love. So yeah, it was this something you just kind of pieced together yourself, or was there like another database which helped with this?
It was a painful mix of things. And, you know, I imagine that if that viz makes its way onto like the Marvel Cinematic Universe Reddit, I'm probably going to get slaughtered, because I had to make assumptions on like what's canon, what's not canon, and, you know, have to kind of make guesses and assess credibility of different websites. But the Marvel Cinematic Universe wiki and fandom was really where I got a lot of that. Also answered some questions by rewatching some of the movies and just seeing what happened. But the idea for the Viz came from the same thing you had. I watched the movies about one a week over last summer, and I still had no idea what was where when. So I wanted to solve that problem for myself and figured I might as well share it.
No, that's perfect. Again, it's very crisp and clean and just does the job, and it's perfect. And I just love the way it all comes together down with his finger like snapping. That's good. No, cool. Okay. Let's go back. So, yeah. I guess side note: are you excited for Endgame?
Oh, incredibly. As you know, you and I have talked about, I have a newborn. I arranged for babysitting for that newborn for Captain Marvel and for Endgame before he was born. So we are set. We are good solid. To go. We're going to have a much needed date night and go see Endgame.
Love it. That's parenting tip 101. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's great. Even before it's born, that's
below. Planning.
I live in Singapore, and the tickets came on sale today. And it's hilarious. All the sites crashed. It was like, it wasn't like the sites were being DDoSed. It was just human traffic just slamming the payment systems. And after about 2 hours, I finally got through. But oh my God, it's just so annoying. But
yeah,
I got tickets too. So we have to compare notes when we've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
hopefully it'll be interesting.
And hopefully there's a Viz in it too, or a couple of Vizzes inside of that, which might inspire us. So yeah.
Absolutely. I'm sure there are.
Perfect. Okay, so what do we got next? Oh, yes. So I guess final question around these Vizzes before we get into the rapid fire section. This question is there anything you'd like to promote, whether it's your stuff or someone else's? We'd love to hear what you'd like to share.
Yeah, I'd really like to plug for This Underdog Life, a podcast, community, blog by Sarah Nell Rodriguez. I'm a big believer in the mission, right? This recognition that much like, you know, women struggling in the career and workforce and balancing life issues like motherhood, but having a strong career, it's really a community for people that are underdogs, and the idea that underdogs have to fight every day to overcome challenges. And so it's this place to hear inspiration, to hear how other people have overcome their stories and learn from that and use those in your own story and your own struggles, but also to share and lead with kindness. So to help one another and kind of propel that forward. So I will be on that podcast in a little bit, speaking around what it's like to try to succeed and have a career when you have a chronic autoimmune disorder. Right. So it's such a strong community that really serves to kind of bind people together under a diverse set of struggles. And I really believe in her cause.
Wow. That sounds amazing. I didn't even know about it. I'm going to put that link down below too. That's cool. I'm going to go check that out totally. Cause I guess you're right. Struggles aren't just one thing. It's a spectrum. And I guess if that can, the struggle itself can kind of, I guess, be a common denominator to help empathize and support each other. That's inspiring.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And of course I'd be remiss if I didn't plug my company's portfolio that we're working so hard on. On Tableau Public, you can search Front Health and see our portfolio. We just put out a Viz that does risk scoring based on social determinants. So looking at zip codes and the potential ramifications on your health, just based on the socioeconomic status of the area in which you live. So focused in Ohio, that's where we are. That's our backyard. But a lot of really interesting kind of biostatistical methods and some econometrics went into that. And we're really thrilled with the design. And there's a number of other things on there that we're releasing as well.
Oh, wow. I think I've just found it. I'm just bringing it up on the screen now. But again, I'll put a link in the show notes and the video description. But this looks amazing. I may have to get you back for another podcast later to talk about this, because this seems incredible. Like I've got to dive into it more, but it seems like all those things you described, it's definitely come to fruition, and like I feel there's a rich story in here too. So, and looking at your design, it makes me want to go and explore and dive into. So cool. Okay, I'll put the link into that in the profile too.
Definitely. That was a Jackalope project. I think it used every skill set I have to put that one together. So it was really fun to just string all these different talents and skills and also challenge myself to learn new ones and grow in different areas. So that was a really fun one to put together.
Awesome. Okay, no, cool. I'm totally looking forward to checking that one out. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we'll dive into rapid fire questions. So yeah, we've got about 20 minutes left. So yeah, like I'm just going to throw them at you, take as little or as long as you like. But yeah, this should be just a great way to kind of, I guess we've learned about your visors quite a bit, but this is just going to be a great way to kind of get to know you, the person behind the visors. So
yeah,
it should be good. Okay, so first question is, who or what publications around DataViz do you follow regularly?
Yeah, so I think the first thing for me was to get into the Twitter community and just, you know, my rule of thumb was to look for those pictures that you get at the Tableau conference, either someone holding that sign up, right? Mm-hmm. Or that colored background with a person in grayscale. For that. If the person has that, I follow, right? That was my way of trying to say, okay, I know this person is at least a little bit interested in DataViz. I want to build that out. But through that, I started to see who was posting, what was interesting to me. So, not one person per se in there, but just being part of and following and active in the Twitter community. I will say, my mentor and someone that is really championing some causes I strongly believe in, the Zen master Bridget Coghlan, right?
She's great.
She's also in my backyard, Columbus, Ohio. But she's championing data ethics, and she's really opened my mind to concepts like we're talking about here in the Captain Marvel viz, where, you know, I need to open my mind to try to understand experiences and struggles that aren't my own and shut up for a little bit and listen and then try to help champion those causes. But also thinking about just ethics in general around data and how it's being used. And we work with healthcare data and EPHI at my organization. Because of some of the things that Bridget's taught me, we started a data ethics committee internally. It's really championing and opening my eyes for that. So highly recommend following Bridget Coghlan.
Yeah, that makes sense totally. She's great. Just her work is awesome. But it's also, yeah, got a huge, I guess, ethical or moral edge to it, which again is great. You know, you can make all the fun, silly visits, but also you can make some really powerful, impactful ones too. So. And she definitely does a lot of that. So that's great. Okay, cool.
There's also about 20 DataViz blogs that I follow. I'm not going to list those all off. But what I am going to say is I'm really interested in the ones that talk about design strategy. And so things like 538, The Guardian, Financial Times, right? Those organizations are talking about their guides, their standards, their style guides, and how they're trying to connect those to what they believe their audiences are trying to learn, how they want them to feel, what they want them to do. Seeing that design strategy at someone that's curating DataViz is a really important read for me and helps me grow a lot.
That's awesome. And I follow, I think, a lot of those you mentioned, which is good. And I think, was it The Economist in the last couple of weeks? They did a post on what they actually did wrong throughout the years. And that was a great way to like humble, to like, hey, we messed up. Here's what we should have done. And I feel that was a great learning experience too, to kind of, you know, because we all make mistakes and we can always grow and do better. So it's awesome to see them, you know, paying it forward and using themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a cool post.
Yeah. Great. No, thanks. Okay. I'll link all those too. It's going to be quite a long links, but I'll make sure to prioritize the good ones, the right ones. So, okay. Next question is, well, I guess I say one to three, but if you had to pick one, what would be your number one, I guess, trick or tip for using Tableau for anyone who's kind of new to it?
It's going to be the dual axis. I had a point in my career where, you know, I worked with that show me tab.
Oh yeah.
And that was it, right? That's what Tableau can do. And in fact, I was, you know, consulting in DataViz in general and, you know, had to make recommendations on tool assessments and tool choices. And here I was limiting myself to that show me viz. And then I had someone show me how to make a donut chart. And that was such a pivotal change in how I use the tool for the reason of like, you're convincing the tool that there's really two axes, right? Even when there's not. And then that lets you bring more shapes and overlap them. And I realized that the show me tab isn't where it's at with this tool. And so it completely changed how I view this tool's capabilities. I mean, dramatically. And I don't think I've clicked on the show me tab once since then. It's just that it completely changed how I use the tool. So the axis recommendation was like, that was the turning point for me.
Like the sort of mind blown kind of, Great. Yeah. No, that's awesome. As I think you mentioned a good point, because the show me thing is good if you're starting off. It kind of gives you like, it's like training wheels. Like you kind of get used to what is and isn't possible. But I think, you've got to know that that's not the all everything you can do. And so, I think it's a great feeling when you kind of take those training wheels off and then start to build your own from scratch as you understand the UI and how charts work. And no, that's a great tip. Thanks, Josh. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Next question is, if you can you tell us what your favorite chart type is?
So I'm going to say when the correct chart that fits the kind of data you're presenting meets the correct user and the correct use case. Any chart then. If it's a bar chart, I think it's just as gorgeous as any of these more advanced visualizations. It's really when those three combine. If I were to say a bar chart or a slope chart and I see it misused, I don't like it anymore. So it's that triangle of meets the user, meets the data, meets the use case. That's my favorite chart type.
I love that. That's great. Yeah, because that's totally true. Like one chart could be amazing for one thing, but terrible for another. I like that. I'm going to have to remember that one. That's good. Because it is like, and it's not one of those dilemmas where like you see on those memes where it's like pick two. You've got to pick all three to make it work. It's not just that's brilliant. Just side note, I guess, does that still apply to pie charts? Because they get a bad rap, and I like to think there's time and a place for them, and they're not like blanket don't use. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. so there is in the exhibit's no longer up, but in Columbus, Ohio's art museum, they had this gorgeous exhibit. I mean, it was basically a bunch of data artists and something called the Measures of Humanity exhibit. And in there was I bet it was a 5 foot tall pie chart made out of materials.
Oh my God.
And what it was depicting was the proportion of global military spending by country. So how much each country was contributing.
Right.
There's a lot of countries in the world. So there was like near 200 slices in this chart. That sounds terrible, but it worked so well.
Okay.
And I can back this up with the evidence that there were two other Zen masters at this exhibit with me, and we all agreed, and including a number of other data viz experts in Columbus, Ohio, and we all agreed like this works. And the reason being is that you could look at this chart and you could see that half of the chart was taken up by one country, which was the US. And look at that and you're like, wait a minute, who ate half the pizza? Right? It was that simple. And I can't think of another chart type that would have immediately shown how disproportionate one country was. The point of this story really didn't seem to be about all these small little slices they were trying to squeeze in.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah, because when someone says 200 slice pie chart, I'm like, ugh. But if the main objective is show that disproportionate spending, then it's perfect. So that's wow. I guess side question: do you have any pictures? Were you allowed to take pictures of that? I'm really curious to see that.
I believe there is. We were allowed to take pictures. I believe there's one on my blog. Okay. I wrote a post on breaking the rules for the right reasons. And this was a really good example of it. Now, mind you, when we think about that triangle of use case, user, and data, kind of breaking the rules on that data aspect when you have 200 categories, but you also have to remember this was 5 foot tall. So like you have a little bit more flexibility to work there and also just the key of the story. So I think the use of a pie chart there was absolutely right. It was great for a general audience, and it translates into a food analogy of someone's eating way too much of my pie or my pizza. Yeah. Really well.
That's beautiful. Okay, I'm totally, again, going to check that out. Links below. I encourage everyone to check that out too. So
yeah,
amazing. Cool. 5 foot pie chart. Wow.
Yeah. It's amazing. What an interesting project.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Okay. So I guess you've touched on a few tools, but other than Tableau, what other tools or software have you been using to aid in your data visualization projects?
Pen and paper. A lot of pen and paper. That's where I start my designs. Mm-hmm. That's usually where I tweak and modify my designs. Mm-hmm. I won't try to tweak and modify within Tableau. I'll usually go back to pen and paper first and then try to rebuild what I saw in Tableau. I'm just a big believer in starting outside of the box and then trying to make the box do what you want it to do, as opposed to the other way around. I think Tableau is a brilliant tool because it's so flexible, but mm-hmm. I feel like if I start within that tool, I forget about that flexibility.
Yeah. So even with such a flexible tool as such as Tableau, you're right, it's still, there can be that like friction to thinking and doing, and yeah, what's better than a pen and paper? Wow. There's so many good quotes in this. I'm going to have to write more down. This is gold. Thank you for that. Pen and paper is powerful. I think a lot of people think, oh, do I have to learn like D3 machine learning? And it's like, no, I think, yeah, you're right. Pen and paper could be such a powerful, but often neglected tool. So,
yeah. So then I do have to use a lot of, I shouldn't say do have to, I love using R, a lot of R for statistics, but as well data prep, and some machine learning when appropriate. I'm hesitant to use it, but when it's appropriate, I love it. Mm-hmm. Just enough SQL to start to forget how to use it. Right.
Yeah.
I don't use it all the time, but I'll have to jump in there and have to remember a lot of concepts there. And then of course, PowerPoint, PowerPoint for image generation, for low fidelity mockups, trying to accelerate how I can get to building the right thing in Tableau as quickly as possible.
Interesting. My previous guest on the podcast too, Kevin Flerlich, he actually mentioned he uses PowerPoint too for that same thing, like image generation and that kind of stuff. And I just went on the deep end and started using PowerPoint and Illustrator. But again, there's nothing wrong with using PowerPoint because it's, if you know how to use it and you can quickly get what you want on a page to generate an image or mock stuff up, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. So, okay, I'm going to have to get back into PowerPoint. This is good.
I actually started using PowerPoint after taking a class from, it was in user experience online. And the professor was like, really don't need these fancy tools. If you have PowerPoint, that works. That's what I use.
Yeah.
Which I thought was so interesting. And it felt freeing that I don't have to learn these more complex, hefty tools for most of the work that I'm doing.
No, that's great. It's good to see great minds think alike. Just because I had this epiphany earlier this year where I teach data viz at my company. And I often thought it was unfair. Like I teach them the principles and the practices. And then they'd have to go learn tools, which I think they should learn, but they shouldn't be critical. But they shouldn't have to feel that's a barrier. And I was like, well, why don't you just draw them in Google Slides? If you know exactly how to lay things out on a page and you want the text and the labels to be here and there and this bar to be stand out of a different color, you can draw that so quickly in Slides or PowerPoint. So yeah, I think what you've mentioned is a great enabler. Like if you know what you need to do, and PowerPoint's the quickest way of doing it, yeah, nothing wrong with using PowerPoint or Slides. Yeah.
Yeah. We hosted a workshop for five of the big health systems here in Ohio. That was Front Health being we. And we didn't open a DataViz tool until like the last hour of this like 5 hour workshop. Wow. We gave them graph paper and we gave them colored pencils and markers. And we spent all of our time in that. Again, not that the tools are too slow, but we want them to learn the flexibility first so that they can realize that these tools are flexible enough to let us accomplish our vision.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I think that's the most powerful message because it's kind of in here, not the codey stuff. Like it's just a tool at the end of the day. So a tool without the critical thinking or design approach is pointless. So no, that's good to hear places teach that. Cool. Okay, this is a bit of an easy one. What was your first version of Tableau?
That was 8.2. I don't think I really started using it until maybe like a later version of 8. But I remember being in a boot camp, learning the term business intelligence, learning that data visualization was a thing that people did. Getting my hands on Tableau for, I think it was maybe 45 minutes, and then didn't touch it for about a year. so then I would say 8.2 for 45 minutes, but then moving into like the later versions, especially getting into 9, when I joined the data science practice, that was how we initially explored our data. So a lot in 9 and beyond.
Nice. No, I think that's a good jumping on point. That's why I think when the releases kind of became more frequent and they were listening to the users so much more. So mm-hmm. yeah, you joined at a good time. Was that was just before Level of Detail Calcs came out, I think. So, or was that just after? I can't remember. But again, I think that came due to community around about that time.
Yeah. I think that sounds right. Of like mm-hmm. Level of Detail was like this new exciting thing, and now I don't know how to think about Tableau without those. So you're bringing me back quite a bit.
Yeah, it's kind of good. It's like you appreciate all the new stuff. If you like the older the version, the more you appreciate everything going forward, I guess.
Yeah.
Great. Speaking of Tableau again, what would be one feature you'd love them to see implement which they haven't already?
Alignment, like in PowerPoint, I want to be able to select multiple text boxes, sheets, etc. And I just want to be able to align those on a dashboard. I have to click on every object, and man, there's just, or even the distribute horizontally or distribute vertically functionality in PowerPoint, the number of times I've had to actually do math to figure out where to put objects in Tableau. I'm like, let a computer solve this for me.
And it's like, you know, it can be done because other ones do it. So it's, who's got time for math, right? So no, that's a great one, because I often find myself fiddling with alignments and stuff. So that's great. If there's not a feature request, I'm going to find it or make one, and I'll put it in a link below. Because I think that should totally be prioritized.
I've heard other people mention it too, so I'm sure that there's an idea thing. You're making me realize that I should probably go find that and upvote it too.
If whatever I find, I'll send it your way.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So we've actually reached the end of our questions. In a few minutes we have remaining or not, do you have anything else you'd like to mention or raise or talk about?
You know, the only thing coming to mind is just as we're talking about Captain Marvel, and then, you know, circling back on ethics with Bridget's work as well. And even looking through some of the other Marvel vizzes I've done. I think one of the most exciting opportunities that the field of data viz has provided me was an ability to learn other perspectives that aren't my own. And about other struggles, similar to what Underdog Life is trying to do, learn about other struggles and perspectives that don't match up with the personal experiences I've had in my life. And with that, be able to learn and empathize with people a little bit more. It's really an act of listening to the data to learn about others' experiences as much as I can.
That's awesome. That's really inspiring. And I feel we could all benefit from doing that a little bit more. Just from, I guess, personal growth, but also, as I've seen with your vizzes, it leads you to make amazing vizzes, which can help you grow as well, skill-wise, as well as personally. So,
I appreciate that.
Cool. Yeah, no, this is good. I've learned a lot myself. I hope our listeners do too. Okay, so yeah, thank you very much, Josh. This has been an awesome experience for me, and hopefully everyone else. I've learned so much throughout this, and it's been really inspiring to hear how you approach vizzes, your background, and just I'm super keen to dive into a lot of more of your visualizations, past, present, and future, to see what other great insights and narratives you drive.
Thank you for having me on the show. This is great.
Cool. Thank you. Okay, so that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening, and be sure to check out the show notes for everything we've covered today. And if you're new to the podcast, consider subscribing to stay up to date with all the latest episodes. Also visit datasaurus-rex.com/welcome to see all of the other data visualization content we have to help you out. Until the next time.